Welcome to the FishExplorer.com's Fly Fishing Podcast. This is a show where we talk about everything from how to fish, where to fish, what to fish for, and whatever else we want to talk about. We will talk to the legends of fishing, guides, fishermen, and anybody else who wants to talk fishing. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are out there in Fish Explorer land. This is Tim Fishman Emery coming to you from my office perched high above the funny looking mountains out there that are clear as a bell today. Today is a very special podcast, and if you're just finding us on the podcast, we are located at FishExplorer.com. That's www.FishExplorer.com. We are the number one resource for fishing information in the state of Colorado, and hopefully very soon to be out of the state of Colorado, going to places like Wyoming, Texas, California, and anywhere else we can find people who like to fish, which is, I think, everywhere. Our podcast today is a very special guest, and we're going to talk about a very special subject. Recently, last week, middle of January, beginning of January, we lost a very special friend to Colorado outdoors, and actually outdoors in general in the West. Mr. Charlie Myers passed away after a long battle with lung cancer. And, you know, I got to spend the weekend at the International Sportsman's Expo talking to people about Charlie and how he did his thing and what he did for this environment. And I happened to have the pleasure to know one of his good friends and somebody who is very large in this industry, Mr. Kirk Dieter, who is editor at large of Field at Stream, author of and host of the Field and Stream fly fishing blog. He is a writer and a generous man, and has been going through a lot, and I know it's a big loss. And Kirk, how are you?
I'm hanging in there. Thanks, Tim. It's definitely a loss for me, losing Charlie as a friend, but I think in a much greater context, it's a loss for outdoorsmen, and especially here in Colorado, but throughout the country.
Yep, and you and I hosted a panel at Friday Night Bites on Friday night, and we were going to have a moment of silence, but you kind of brought up the point that Charlie didn't like that type of thing and wasn't into it. So he'd rather have a celebration. So we had a moment of applause, and I thought that was very special. I got a little teary-eyed, I have to tell you. The hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I thought that was really cool. But you kind of brought that about. Tell us a little bit more about, you know, Charlie and what he was like for those of us who kind of knew him, but only knew him really through the articles in the paper.
Well, you know, I think the thing with Charlie is just that. He was open and embracing to people who knew him and people who didn't know him. He was an incredibly gracious man, certainly walked the walk as far as the outdoors is concerned. The thing of it is, with being an outdoor writer, you have to do it to be able to report credibly on what you're talking about. In other words, you don't have to have played for the Broncos to write the beat that covers the Broncos, or you don't have to have run for mayor to cover political stories. But Charlie was very credible and very passionate about what he did. And he was one of the best writers I've ever known. And I think the outdoors world is just now starting to realize, and always will realize, what a gift it was that this great writer chose the outdoors as the beat that he wanted to cover.
You know, I was talking to Terry Wickstrom, and Terry has been an author and so forth, and he kept going back to the fact that Charlie wrote two columns a week for however long I can remember, which doesn't sound easy. And you being a writer, you know, I can't write to save my life. I can talk, I can't write. But you being a writer, is that as difficult as we think it is?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Charlie's work was prolific. You put it into context, it took me a while after I first met him, but I learned that Charlie had been covering the outdoors in Denver since 1966, and that was the year that I was born. So... yeah, it puts into context, you know, the amount that I certainly had to learn by being in his presence and enjoying the times we spent together. And, you know, what a neat thing it was that someone that was generations apart from me, and I'm not the only one, he embraced people of all walks, of all interests, whether you are a rank beginner in the sport or you are a hardcore professional. You know, I've heard from people like Lefty Cray and Conway Bowman, you know, from the East Coast to the West Coast, of many, many instances of how Charlie had an impact and influence on their lives. And it's very touching, touching to his family.
A lot of people our age, you know, I'm a little bit younger than you, but we don't realize that, you know, Charlie started out in the ski industry, and he was a big-time promoter of skiing in Colorado, wrote the beat, and, you know, there's not much the persona of the ski industry is not what it used to be. You know, in the late 60s and early 70s, it was, the skiing was something that, you know, it was a great majestic trip. And now it's kind of here commonplace. But I know, because my dad was there with Charlie, and that's how I know Charlie, they talked a lot about the beginning, you know, how they had leather boots and how they had to walk up this side of the mountain to pack it down. And you know, and Charlie was right there writing about making it, you know, come to that next level.
Yeah, and in fact, Charlie covered 6 Olympic Games, and Charlie was inducted into the Colorado Ski Hall of Fame in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, put this in context as well, Charlie's beats covered skiing, and then he covered the outdoors, hunting and fishing, which I don't think is a coincidence by any stretch. Colorado's number one and number two industries right now.
No, I agree. And, you know, I was a ski instructor for 13 years, and I learned how to fly fish when I was a ski instructor. You know, there were many days I got off the hill at 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the afternoon in the spring and went fishing. You know, they're almost on a consistent, every spring day I was trying to get on the river. So it's obvious that skiers and even snowboarders now in this generation and the outdoors have something in common.
Absolutely. It's a mindset and a lifestyle and kindred spirits who enjoy being in the grandeur of the Colorado outdoors. It's very easy to cross over from one sport to the next as seasons change and pass and overlap. You know, many days I myself have caught the morning powder and then decided to kick off the boots and throw on the waders and catch the afternoon hatch.
Right. Another thing, you know, Charlie was really politically involved. He had his finger on everything going on for the outdoorsmen and to protect us. And if he saw something he didn't like, he'd bring that up in his articles. And I know the fishermen and the hunters and the outdoorsmen rallied around that. And this is where we got half our political information, probably for most hunters and fishermen, almost all our political information.
That's true. And Charlie was never afraid to wear his environmental conscience on his sleeve. And he certainly wasn't afraid to call people, the Division of Wildlife or other entities, on policy decisions, the way resources were protected and so forth.
Yeah, and you know, going forward here without Charlie, hopefully we've got somebody coming up in that area that can help us know this stuff. You know, one thing, I'm big involved with Trout Unlimited, and we've got a guy on our board who's part of the Colorado at Division of Wildlife doing their policies and their lobbying. He says the biggest problem in politics right now for outdoorsmen is we're all separate. You know, it's Colorado Trout Unlimited and the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and the Mule Deer Foundation and the Bass Clubs and Pheasants Forever and Ducks Unlimited, and we don't have a single voice, and it's something that we're starting to see get affected. We're starting to lose the water, we're starting to lose the conservation, and we need to all come together as outdoorsmen and not just hunters and fishermen that are separated.
I agree with you, and I on many fronts. You know, Charlie was the nexus and the catalyst that brought a lot of voices together and had us all singing off the same sheet of music, so to speak. And on the one hand, Charlie's influence is going to be felt in that he mentored many in many walks of life with many specific outdoor interests, and that's a good thing. And I don't know that there will ever be anyone that can really fill his shoes or complete the mission that Charlie did with the grace and effect that Charlie was able to do it. But I do think that he sowed a lot of seeds that if they're cultivated the right way, and we as sportsmen, in Charlie's honor and spirit, try to work more cohesively together, it might be the best way of all to honor his legacy and to protect the outdoors and the experience in the outdoors for many generations to come.
Yeah. Kirk, tell me one of your fond memories, a fishing story about hanging out with Charlie.
Well, we actually got to go on a number of different things. It was funny. He dragged me along and marched me into the canyons and paddle across the lakes and so forth. But I remember one time we went up to Wyoming and we fished in the Wyoming range, and we were on a Trout Unlimited expedition. It was a media trip I was covering for Field and Stream, and he was doing it for the Post. But on this trip, our group got 7 flat tires driving in these back mountain roads. And yet the last day, Charlie still wanted to go fish on the Grays River. And we did. We got in his Jeep, and we trucked up over the range, and we got down. And sure enough, we got another flat tire. And we put the donut on, and it was just getting later in the day. But Charlie just wasn't ready to drive out of there. He wanted to go fish a little bit more, which we did. And rolled into Jackson, Wyoming on that little donut tire in a massive thunderstorm. And Charlie was just rolling with it. It was just another day at the office for him. And I was, of course, nervous. And he had the clout to find the manager of the Big O Tire Store and get a spare put on in the middle of the night so that we could go off and fish the Snake River the next day. Nothing slowed Charlie down. I mean, when he was on it, he was like a hound on a ham bone. He wanted that, get that fishing, and he did it. And I learned a lot by his example. I mean, sometimes you just need to roll with it and get after the adventure.
Right. You know, my memory just came from this summer when I had been asking him to do something about the Carp Slam. And so I went out there, and it was about a week ahead of the Carp Slam, and I was getting nervous because we weren't catching a lot of carp at the time. So, I was doing my homework, really making sure that I got this story the right way. I called Charlie the night before. I said, "Charlie, we got to push things back. We were supposed to meet at 9 o'clock the next morning." I said, "We got to push things back to noon." He said, "Okay, but I think we had a bad connection," or he didn't hear me. So the next morning, I'm sitting in my office doing some work, thinking I'm meeting Charlie at noon, and I get this call. He goes, "Tim, where are you?" I said, "Well, I'm sitting in my office." "Why?" He goes, "Because I'm sitting here on the river waiting for you. We were supposed to meet." I'm like, "Oh, boy." So I jumped out of my chair, ran, got in my truck. I said, "Charlie, I'll be there in 15 minutes. So I flew down from the tech center, got to Mile High Stadium, and he was sitting there and sitting there with Diana, and he gets out, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm really sorry." He was cool as could be. He wasn't mad at me or anything like that. So we got out there, and sure enough, we looked over the bridge right there at Mile High, behind Mile High Station, and there was a bunch of fish there, and I was like, "Oh, good." And they're eating. So Charlie, at this time, carrying his oxygen, I'm like, "Are you sure? Where do you want to go? What do you want to do?" He goes, "I can get down there. Don't worry about me."
That's right. He marched on.
Yeah.
He was incredible. He was a great athlete.
Oh, yeah.
Basketball player and a skier and a tennis player and all those things.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, so we got down there. I set him up. I said, or he set himself up. He said, "I'm going to stand right up here. You catch one of those guys." And sure enough, after about 5 minutes, I hadn't caught one, and I was starting to get nervous, getting ready to change bugs. And I gave it one more twitch, and sure enough, I caught that fish. He was kind of sluggish. It took about 5 minutes to get him in, and got to put up the picture and smile, and there I am on the back page of the Wednesday section of the Post before the Carp Slam, and oh, it was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the lesson that you learned and the lesson that I learned, many did, is that, Charlie made it happen.
Yeah.
He made it happen in his stories, and he made it happen in his outdoor experiences. And that's a lesson that we can all use as we get out in the field and in the river and all those things.
Right, right.
Sometimes it's not always perfect, and I think that's the newspaperman's job is to plow ahead and to make the deadline and to get things done. And the way Charlie was able to mesh that with the outdoors as well was nothing short of amazing.
Right, right, right. Now, Kirk, and if I getting ahead of myself, you guys were working on a project together. Is that still kind of on the books, and is that going to be coming out?
It is. Charlie and I wrote the Little Red Book of Fly Fishing, and it's 250 tips that Charlie learned over his career and I learned in my career. As I would write and travel, you'd pick up a tip or a technique or a thought, and Charlie certainly had so many of those, I can't even count them. But the thought was that, you know, fly fishing is not rocket science, and a lot of people make this sport harder than it has to be. And we wanted to make it folksy, accessible, quick-hitting, easily understood tips. And so we did. And I'm happy to say that we finished the manuscript just a few weeks before Charlie passed away, and he was able to see he was very proud of the work. And I was very, very, very proud and honored to have been able to partner with him on that. It's going to be released in May. It's published by Skyhorse Publishing, and it's called The Little Red Book of Fly Fishing.
I can't wait. I'll be in line, first in line to get that book. I'll camp out overnight if I have to, because that's the type of thing that fly fishing needs. You hit it on the head. It's not rocket science. It's not as technical as everybody makes it out to be, and it's just a fun way to get out there and do a lot of fishing, right?
That's absolutely right. There are many ways to be successful. and some of them involve perfect, beautiful loops when you cast, and some of them are pretty down and dirty. But as long as you're out there having fun, I think that's the most important thing.
Right, right. So what's coming up for you in the next couple months? I'm sure you've got a bunch of trips planned.
I do. I'm getting into the season. For me, with Field and Stream, we run a lot of our fishing stories in February, March, April, May, and June. Mm-hmm. And I've been writing those stories, and they're coming out. I'll have a feature in February on the Bassmaster Classic. Tips, I went out and fished with Kevin Van Dam and Mike Iaconelli and Gary Klein and Randy Howell and also Dean Rojas.
Mm-hmm.
And learned their early season bass techniques that they'll be using at the Classic coming up in Alabama in February. So we actually went and fished with them last year and let the story germinate, and we wrote it, and it's going to be in the February issue.
Nice.
As for travels, I'm on my way next week. I'm going to be going to Louisiana and doing some red fishing with Captain Greg Arnold, and now's the time when the big bull reds are in the flats, and so we'll be doing that. And I've got some going deep features coming out too, which is when I put on my scuba gear and I go down and hang out with the fish as people are fishing to them. So in April and May, issues of Field and Stream, it'll be going deep for walleye, and May going deep in the name of pike research.
It is. You got a good thing going. Well, we're going to run out of time here, but, you know, once again, Charlie Myers, who was a hero and truly one of the Colorado legends, passed away. And Kirk, you've been great to come on and talk about him and tell us stories about him. And hopefully the people out there understand really what he did for this outdoors community, and not only in Colorado, but I think the nation, and how we need to step up and take over his mantra and really develop the outdoors and keep that going and keep it safe and pristine and get kids and family members back into the outdoors, because I think that's one of the key issues.
That's what it's all about, and thank you very much for having me. It was great talking to you. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to talk about a guy who was a, a great mentor and a great friend, and someone that we're all going to miss quite a bit. And also, good luck and congratulations on the good work you're doing with Fish Explorer. I really enjoy it.
Thanks, Kirk. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
Well, Colorado definitely lost a living legend and lost a legend, and hopefully people out there and you guys listening to the podcast remember this and remember what Charlie did for Colorado, and we need to carry that on. We need to fish. We need to get them in the outdoors. We need to take people who don't fish and get them in the outdoors, and it doesn't matter what the cost is. You know, fishing is a relatively cheap a way to get out there and go enjoy the outdoors. You can get a rod, reel, line, no matter what, whether it's a fly rod or a spin rod or anything, for basically under $150. And you buy it once, and then you never have to pay again, besides a license for $30 a year, which goes to a good cause. So get out there, take your kids fishing, take people fishing with you. Don't be afraid, and if you need help or advice, please look us up on Fish Explorer, because we've got all that advice. We can take care of you. So, you know, Charlie was a great man, and we're going to miss him. I think somebody's going to step up and really take over and show us and carry on his tradition. And Kirk was a great man, and thanks for doing that with us. Last week, got to spend 4 days at the Colorado Convention Center through the International Sportsman's Expo. And for everybody who stopped by and saw us, it was great to meet you, put a lot of names with faces. If I didn't have time to spend with you, I apologize. It was kind of busy. I had a lot of jobs going on, but I can't thank enough the people who volunteered. And I'm not going to name them because I will leave somebody off, but everybody who was a part of it who volunteered to help out, it was great. Some really cool stuff. Good videos from TrophyRoom.com. Friday Night Bites was a huge success. Enjoyed that immensely. You know, one thing that we were doing is upgrading to FXR Plus, which adds a lot of value to your Fish Explorer experience. The upgraded moon phases, the fishing log, everything else you need to upgrade if you're not part of that, because it is really a tool. The FXR Plus forum, which the guys on that forum really do share more secrets and really tell you more. They'll start, you know, they talk a little bit on the open forum, but then they'll really get into deep detail about what was going on, so you can ask them more questions. That is huge. You get discounts in the store, everything else. You just got to do it. You got to spread the word, get people out there. This year is going to be huge for Fish Explorer. We're going to look into expansion into Wyoming, Texas, Nebraska, California, and so forth. So, you know, be looking for that, looking for the changes. The site will stay the same. The states will all be represented by their own home pages, so you won't have a lot of interference, and it won't look any different. You'll just be able to go to Wyoming or go to Nebraska and find out more information. Now, we don't know exactly how that's going to work, so be on the lookout for what's going on. You know, Fish Explorer's got to make some money, of course, to stay alive, but we built a great community, and again, want to just thank everybody. World Fish Network, ISE, International Sportsman's Expo was great, and everybody who stopped by for my presentations, I appreciate it. Oh, next week, don't know exactly. Oh, actually, I know exactly who we're going to talk to. We're going to talk to John St. John of Hog Island Boat Works, who has a very amazing thing that he's going to start. And we're going to be one of the first ones to do it, called Fish It Forward, talking about bringing somebody who's never fished into the fishing world and making them go pass that on to somebody else. So that's going to be a great event. This weekend, Saturday, I will be broadcasting live from the Bass Pro Shops on 104.3 FM, the Fan Outdoors, live from Bass Pro Shops, my first live two-hour show. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. So in the meantime, fishing is getting good. The weather's been good. People have been catching fish on the South Platte in Denver. Tailwaters are fishing great, and the ice is perfect. So that means you got to make sure, get out there and go fishing.